a description of extreme poverty from a Detroit woman who has lived it. Your fingers get slow, you know. Your whole body slows down. You can't really do much. You try to put a good face on for the kids. But when they leave, you just keep still. Pull the covers around you. November, your stomach is crying at you, but by December, you know, you just start to shut down. Around 3, you get up for the kids, put on the space heater so they come home and it's warm in here. If I look around at you this morning, I see face after face that has experienced a downturn in fortunes as a result of the 2008 financial collapse. These scary losses are not to be discounted. At the same time, few of us here have experienced food insecurity, active hunger, not knowing where our next meal is coming from. I and my children were on welfare during part of the time I was in college, but we were never hungry. At the first of the month when we were paid, we actually went to what we called the A&W root beer store and had hamburgers and root beer floats, which was a very big treat. We were poor, but we were not hungry. Our budget for the three of us for food was $10 a week, and we did okay. Now, I know that some of you here today do experience low food security, probably not talking about it because of the judgment that is often leveled at poor people. I hope you are feeling fully included this morning. I want in no way to preach as though you are other, as though you are not a cherished person in this congregation, one of God's children, as we all are. It's just that most of my remarks today are aimed at the majority of us here, and we, the majority, do not usually face hunger. Even though there is much poverty in our country, being poor in the United States is basically a moral issue. Perhaps it started with Calvinism at its worst. The Puritan faith was actually somewhat communitarian in its roots. Read John Winthrop. But it perniciously developed to include the idea that you are a lot more likely to be one of the elect, one of those guaranteed to go to heaven, if you are materially successful. In The Protestant Ethic and the Spirit of Capitalism in 1904, Max Weber pointed out that making money is closely associated with religion, with Protestant ethics. He quotes Benjamin Franklin in this book, who said, "The peculiarity of this philosophy of avarice appears to be the ideal of the honest man of recognized credit, and above all, the idea of a duty of the individual toward the increase of his capital, which is assumed as an end in itself. Truly, what is preached here is not simply a means of making one's way in the world, but a peculiar ethic." Clearly, there is morality involved in the issue of how well off you are materially. And now, if we move into the later 20th century, we'll see more words that affect our thinking, that affect our attitudes toward the poor. Ronald Reagan, in 1976, gave us the welfare queen, the made-up woman who, now this is a quotation, it's supposed to be about a real person in Chicago, who has 80 names, 30 addresses, 12 social security cards, she's got Medicaid, getting food stamps, and is collecting welfare under each of her names. Her tax-free cash income alone is over $150,000. Never mind that this alleged scammer was investigated and found not to exist. The tale grabbed the American imagination, and she resurfaces every election year. Between times, sometimes too. Obama has been called a food stamp president. Notice the implication that a black president would be doling out undeserved benefits. Racism and classism are closely related. It has been said in this election cycle that poor people should want paychecks, not handouts. As if they don't. The fact of the matter is that this judgmental moralizing about the puny moral fiber of poor people has little basis in fact. I invite you to Google attitudes toward the poor and attributions for poverty, to read a lot about studies that give the lie to our current attitudes toward the poor, the hungry, the wretched masses yearning to be free. And there are also numerous sources listed at the end of the printed version of this sermon, which is, as always, in the North Vestibule, pointing to the increase in low food security during the last hard economic times, pointing to the pernicious myth-making that brands the poor as weak and less than. What I'd like to do today is bring it home a little. Those of us here this morning who are not poor or hungry are probably feeling some relief that what I've said just doesn't apply to us. The problem is, it does. Now, certainly, we do not often make racist or classist claims that make ourselves look like morally superior, self-made persons. And certainly, we do not feel ourselves consciously superior to hungry people. But how can we escape our American upbringing? What have we heard all our lives? Welfare cheats, lazy, manipulative, irresponsible, morally suspect. Now, today's service has two purposes. One is to encourage every one of you, if you possibly can, to step into some kind of service that alleviates poverty, either direct service or systemic work in legislatures, city councils, Congress, and other policy-making bodies. Our stalwart hunger action folks, our faithful social action strand people, will be standing by in the vestibules to let you know how you can become involved. The familiar feeding the 4,000 story means to most of us that Jesus' generous, faith-inspiring presence moved all the people there to put forth what they had been hoarding to themselves. And when everyone gave what they had, small or large, no one went hungry. We'll also hear from a couple of people who have actually had the experience of doing this work in just a bit. We so hope that some of you will be called to address the hunger issue in any way, however small, to find that you can spare some of your time and treasure and talent and contribute to the communal solution. Perhaps it will lead to something larger. Perhaps you will simply be well enough educated to carry on compelling conversations that may change people and systems. So please hang around with our social action team members after service. The primary purpose of my words, though, is to address that American upbringing situation. You know how we always say, sermons are meant to comfort the afflicted and afflict the comfortable. Well, and this is a more afflicting sermon than usual. And so at this point, I encourage us all to just open our hearts and not feel worried or tense and know that we care about each other, okay? Because it really is an afflicting sermon. I hope to persuade each of us to look into our hearts more deeply than we usually do. I hope that each of us can find that part we are not proud of, the peace that's kind of happy to be comfortable and doesn't want to look at the folks who aren't comfortable. The peace that reluctantly, unconsciously, suspects that they are, in fact, not quite our moral equals. We do not want to be hard-hearted, prideful wretches, but part of us is hard-hearted and prideful because we've been reared in a culture that allows and encourages us to be that way. Now, may I once again speak to the poor who are among us here today, hoping that your hearts can accept and forgive our failings. For what it's worth, I find this soul-searching miserably uncomfortable. I really hate it. And I am grateful for your companionship on this religious journey. I thank you. Here's an exercise I'm recommending to us to make a baby step on the journey towards seeing all people of all categories as our neighbors. A little exercise that might start lifting us out of the dark place that's created by the demoralizing, dehumanizing words that we hear every day. The next time we see poor people on a street corner asking for money, I invite us to take a breath and allow ourselves to simply dwell in their space as well as we can. How might they have gotten to that street corner? How might such as we arrive in that place, carrying our own pathetic, wrenching sign, those words that cause motorists to speed past us or avoid our eyes, desperately rendering us invisible? I don't care if you give them money or not. That's your decision. I'm interested in the spiritual question of how we see them as full human beings, just like we are. I'm interested in going a little step further and saying, there, but for the grace of God, go I. The choir sang, in a world so full of beauty and wonder, we can see so much that should not be. Children live in poverty and hunger. How can we pretend we do not see? Kyrie eleison. Lord, have mercy. And as we bravely face the discomfort of putting ourselves in the sign carrier's shoes, the insidious thought may come, but I worked hard and I have earned what I have. We are profoundly taught to believe that, and it's undoubtedly true at many, many levels. At the same time, not a one of us, rich, poor, or middle, got where we are unaided. There have always been gifts. So, as we are reflecting on the poor person with the sign and how they got where they are, reflecting on how we might get there, let us see if we can bring ourselves into the profoundly un-American and deeply religious attitude of humility. Humility, developed from the root humus of the earth. We are humble because we are humans, every soul and body of us of the earth. We are linked. We are neighbors. We depend on the grace of things well beyond our control, and we depend on the grace of each other, all of us entwined in Indra's net, where everything reflects everything else. We have been carefully taught to fear and avoid the genuinely poor, taught carefully that we who are currently moneyed and fed have a moral leg up on the poor and the hungry. We can unlearn that. We need not be cast down in shame. We have community. We have each other. We have loving fellow travelers. We can work in the world. We can come to know those allegedly others and see our common, humble humanity. We can pray and meditate and come to church and have hard conversations that lead our hearts and our souls toward the common human center. We can live as spiritual people, knowing that we are all brothers and sisters. No.
Good morning. I think that I have become more generous and grateful due to my involvement in social justice. My involvement has also made me more aware of my individual classism. Generosity is the habit of giving without expecting anything in return. It can involve offering time, assets, or talents. That's from Wikipedia. Gratefulness is the acknowledgement of having received something good from another. Synonyms are appreciation, gratitude, thankfulness, and that's from the Merriam-Webster Online Dictionary. Classism, differential treatment based on social class or perceived social class. This same source defines individual classism as classism on a personal or individual level, either in behavior or attitudes, either conscious or intentional, or unconscious and unintentional. And this is from the website Class Action, Building Bridges Across the Class Divide. About 6 months before I retired, which now is just a little over 6 years ago, I became Dylan's big brother through Big Brother Big Sister program, and we were big little up until he graduated from high school. Looking back, I was a consistent supportive friend and helped him to have many novel experiences such as scuba diving. However, I often wished that he was somebody he wasn't. I wanted him to like sports so I could take him to football and basketball games. I wanted him to say thank you, and I wanted him to buy into my ideas regarding hygiene. He acted indifferent to our relationship at times, but when I called my match specialist, she would... I have this problem, but I'll be okay. She would report results of... This is the most touching part for me. Of Dylan, such as... He says you're his best friend. On another occasion, okay, I'm okay now. He says you are his main friend. Once he told her, I can talk to Rick about stuff. I persevered, but it would have helped if I had thought more about why we were different and accepted his perspective. I wish I had thought about this a long time ago. Once I was taking both Dylan and his sister Katie to a I haven't been emotional about this. I don't know what the deal is here. To a Big Brother's Big Sister's picnic on a hot summer evening. I got in the car and without thinking used the power controls to roll up the windows, planning next to turn on the air conditioning. Isn't that what we all do? Dylan, meanwhile, was sitting in the front seat, turned to Katie. This is crazy. And explained why I shut the windows. They have air conditioning in their car. I attended an informational hearing last spring at the legislature on a bill to limit the interest charged on payday loans. The director of the Department of Finance was completely off the mark. He testified that if storefront payday businesses left the state, their former clientele would continue to get payday loans through the internet. However, according to a study conducted by Pew Charitable Trust, that doesn't happen. How could this bright person be so wrong? There are issues with and for the 130 to 150 people who nightly share the Interfaith Homeless Shelter. However, there are also many good things that I see, and here are some of them. A newly homeless couple was led to the shelter by a 30-ish homeless guy. Both of them were anxious, and the woman was scared. The individual who led them to the shelter talked to them several times to make sure that the check-in went smoothly, to reassure them, and to answer their questions. He did much to reduce their anxiety and the woman's fears. A blind older gentleman was led to the shelter and taken care of there by one particular individual, not really looking particularly healthy himself, for a period of at least 2 months. Ron was mentally ill and acted like it. The residents, for the most part, tolerated, lived with all the quirks he brought to the shelter, and helped him get by. At least two residents of the shelter expressed sincere thanks for something I have done for every resident of the shelter that takes my volunteering for granted. Now, at this point, just real briefly, if you want to know more about the shelter, there are several people here. Would you stand up and sit down just so you can ask them questions if you want to hear about it? Just stand up and sit down. So those are people you can ask questions. Has my volunteering changed me? I know it has.
So we've been talking about hunger today, but what I've been reading about in the newspaper is obesity, mainly childhood obesity. I believe that childhood obesity and hunger are related and can coexist in the same individual and family. A national study of more than 40,000 children found that children from lower income households had more than 2 times higher odds of being obese than children from higher income households. You can't just tell someone, well, eat healthy. If that worked, we wouldn't have an obesity problem. Often food with poor nutritional quality is cheaper and more accessible. The Jacksons, that's an easy walk from my house, sells many different kinds of chips, but I've never seen a head of lettuce there. And if I did, it would probably cost twice as much as the lettuce at Winco. A survey by Share Our Strength, a national group whose priority is ending childhood hunger in America, noted that low-income families want to put healthy meals on the table, but the main barrier is cost. Working with Share Our Strength, the Idaho Food Bank offers a program called Cooking Matters that connects families with the food and skills they need to put healthy meals on the table. It's a 6-week course taught by volunteers. You can see where I'm headed with this. Participants learn how to select and prepare nutritious, low-cost ingredients in dishes that their families will eat. Last spring, I observed the first class offered for kids, and it was a pretty chaotic couple of hours. The kids talked about the importance of breakfast, many who actually didn't eat breakfast, and learned to prepare omelets and yogurt parfaits, which they happily consumed. The kids got to take home the ingredients to prepare the parfaits at home. Working in teams, their project for the course was to put together a dinner menu using a minimal budget and then cook and serve it. One young participant said, "It makes me think about eating a lot healthier. Thank you so much. It's been wonderful." The food bank wants to expand their program throughout the state in 2013. As this is Sermon to Service Sunday, I want to let you know that the food bank is looking for volunteers to help with these classes. Just Google the Idaho Food Bank for more information on how you can volunteer, or see me after the service.